Okay, America is losing its religion, and the effects will be long-lasting. Brian, where'd you find this at?
So this was on Yahoo's homepage. I don't know if they necessarily tailor their homepage, but I have a spam Yahoo email account, you know, when businesses want, hey, do you have an email address for coupons? So every once in a while, I'll find things on there. And I saw this, and I was like, what? I'm like, Yahoo's posting something? Like, I at least have to read through this. And so when I did, I was like, hey, this is podcast worthy. So
it's Brian Walsh, and it says it's a 4-minute read.
Yes.
So this means that at the end of the podcast, we will take the total podcast time subtracted by 4 minutes, and that's how much we ran our mouths, right? Is that a fair?
Just a couple of you.
Right. Okay.
All right. I'm going to get it in 3:59. All right. Here we go. New surveys show Americans' membership in communities of worship has declined sharply in recent years, with less than 50% of the country belonging to a church, synagogue, or mosque. Why it matters. The accelerating trend towards a more secular America represents a fundamental change in the national character, one that will have major ramifications for politics and even social cohesion. By the numbers. A Gallup poll released last week, and this was published April the 7th of 2021, found that 47% of Americans reported belonging to a house of worship, which was down from 50% in 2018 and 70% as recently as 1999. The shift away from organized religion is a 21st century phenomenon. U.S. religious membership was 73% when Gallup first measured it in 1937 and stayed above 70% for the next 6 decades. So context. The decline in membership is primarily driven by a sharp rise in the quote-unquote nuns, Americans who express no religious preference. The percentage of Americans who do not identify with any religion rose from 8% between 1998 and 2000 to 21% over the past 3 years. While the percentage of nuns who do not belong to a house of worship has risen as well. The big picture. The story of a more secular America is chiefly, though not entirely, one of generational change. Membership in houses of worship correlates with age, with the oldest Americans much more likely to be church members than younger adults. But while church membership is lower among younger generations, the drop-off is particularly stark among millennials and Gen Z, who are about 30 percentage points lower than the Americans born before 1946, compared to 8 points and 16 points respectively for baby boomers and Gen X. Children who grow up without organized religion are less likely to join houses of worship when they become adults. So it stands to reason that the secularization trend will only continue in the future, barring major demographic or cultural changes. Yes, but generational replacement, the idea that society-wide changes in values between the young and the old can be attributed to their different circumstances growing up, doesn't tell the entire story. Even the oldest Americans have seen a slight rise in the percentage of nuns, while 20% of Gen Xers report no religious affiliation, up from 11% in 1999. So the details. Whatever their religious practices, Americans are increasingly rejecting many of the moral precepts found in most major religions. A 2017 Gallup poll found a significant majority of Americans believe practices like birth control, divorce, extramarital sex, gay and lesbian relations are all morally acceptable. In a piece last year for Foreign Affairs, the political scientist Ronald F. Engelhardt argued that as birth rates have dropped, thanks in part to contraception and falling infant mortality, modern societies have become less observant because they no longer need to uphold the kinds of gender and sexual norms that the major world religions have instilled for centuries. The catch. Just because conventional religious practice is on the decline doesn't mean Americans will have no need to fill what the journalist Murtaza Hussein calls the country's God-shaped hole. While the earlier phases of the civil rights movement were built on the strength of the black church, today many young people are flocking to campaigns like Black Lives Matter that aren't religious in nature, but often adopt the language of religion, spirituality, and justice. Political debates over what America is supposed to mean have taken on the character of theological disputations. Shadi Hamid, a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, wrote in a recent Atlantic essay, "This is what religion without religion looks like." What's next? As religion decreasingly becomes something Americans practice, it may instead become another identity, subsumed into the ongoing culture wars. The trend may also shake up the electorate. The journalist Matt Iglesias noted that when a white person switches from being a Christian to non-affiliated, they are more likely to become a Democrat. But when a black person makes the same switch, the correlation goes the other direction. That could help explain the fairly secular Donald Trump having partial success in increasing the GOP's share of the non-white vote in 2020. The bottom line: the U.S. remains an unusually religious country, with more than 7 in 10 Americans still affiliating with some organized religion, according to the Gallup poll. But conventional religion's power is on the wane, and it might take a miracle for that to change.
All right, how much time?
Well, that's 6:45.
Aww.
6 minutes and 45 seconds?
Retake. Let's redo it.
For a four-minute read?
Well, that was if you were reading it in your head, yes, not out loud, trying to articulate it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
We all read in our head faster because we skip stuff.
Do you read anywhere else?
Some of us read out loud for podcasts.
Yes.
Oh, some of us do not.
So,
all right, well, first issue we take is that his name is Brian, spelled with a Y. All right.
Just how not to do it. Say,
yeah. And one thing you have to spell for the internet listener is nuns. Okay, it's not N-U-N. Okay, it wasn't like the Catholic church ladies. Okay, that's
N-O-N-E-S.
Yes, yes. Not affiliated. Just re-establishing.
So the initial thing that, as I read through this article the first time, was... the first thing is, why post this? You know, Yahoo's a substantial organization. You know, usually what I end up seeing, especially over the last month, because you only get so much, I'll call it headline space. I mean, they have their main headlines or whatever at the top of the page. And then they're next, the articles that they want you to click on. And I didn't take much looking. It's not like I was, went digging for this. I was
on my way. Don't you think it was targeted to you, though, Brian? Don't you think that...
There's a lot of crazy stuff that pops up there that there's no way I'm ever going to click on. Okay. So I don't know that it necessarily would, as far as, because usually if I'm looking for something as far as like them accessing my cookies or something like that, it's usually going to an organization like the Christian Post or Christianity Today, as opposed to looking for like actual type documents and things like that. So, because this is the same stuff. I mean, once you click on something, I'm sure it does, but... I usually will scroll through looking. So that's kind of the initial thought, is why it will, why someone working for Yahoo would consider this. Because I find it interesting, he wrapped out his article with that it might take a miracle, which is acknowledging the supernatural in order for this to change. But
yeah, or using a supernatural word.
Right. But, I mean, I think the first thing we should acknowledge is what causes this. Why is there such a decline in religious affiliation?
Well, I guess I would add to that and just say, is it a decline? Or is it more of just being more transparent? Because they use the word worship, or they use the word religion, or communities of worship is very, very top. And like they're including synagogues, a mosque, church. So I guess my point would be that like not all these places would be in agreement with us regarding being a Christian.
Right, but the title is it's losing its religion. Whatever religion, it's losing it. Mm-hmm.
Which I would just argue and say might not be a bad thing. to some degree, right? It's like you're either going to heaven or going to hell. You either have a relationship with God or you don't. And some religions aren't leading people to God.
Sure. Like, I mean, I think the conversation could be had from a secular perspective, and it could be had from a kingdom perspective or from a pragmatic perspective.
Yeah.
So from a kingdom perspective, I mean, we don't care about religion.
Yeah.
From a kingdom perspective.
But from a pragmatic perspective, I want unsaved, unregenerate teenagers coming to my youth group.
Well,
because then they're going to hear the gospel.
Even as a society, we want religious people because they are normally more morally upright than non-religious people. So, you know, just by the basis of claiming some religion, and that at least acknowledges they have some...
There's an absolute truth.
Or some basis of their morality, their standards, their behavior. They feel like there's a higher power of some sort that they will answer to, which affects their behavior in a positive light.
Which is so interesting considering we're talking a shift from one of the three major religions in the world to his specific organization to mention by name is the Black Lives Matter movement. We have shifted from... Students are leaving Christian homes, they're leaving Jewish homes, they're leaving Muslim homes, and they're following the Black Lives Matter movement. And organizations like them. Organizations that would not identify an absolute truth.
Mm-hmm.
And realistically, would not even, while they would purport that they would want justice and at an absolute, you know, a truth level, clearly we have seen evidence that that organization is not all about justice. So that's something that I thought was kind of interesting about it.
Jack, you've been rather silent.
I have. First of all, the three monotheistic religions that are mentioned are inferred. The synagogue for the Jewish, the mosque for the Muslims, or Islamic, and the church, thus an umbrella of Christianity. Whether it's determined to be true Christianity or not is irrelevant. Those are all three religious faith systems that have a very, very conservative view and structure and strict laws to govern societies. Turn the page in the details section. The 2017 Gallup poll found a significant majority of Americans believe practices like birth control, which these would be against, divorce, against, extramarital sex, against, by as a whole, gay and lesbian relationships, against, are morally acceptable. It goes to show you that one of the key indicators of the decline is how well those movements have pushed their agenda into the mainstream mindset. And that the conservative structure of these three religious systems goes against that societal movement.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, the younger generations are declining. And what was really interesting in this is, it says, but while church membership is lower among younger generations, the drop-off is particularly stark among millennials and Gen Z, who are 30 percentage points lower than Americans born before 1946. Compared to 8 points for those baby boomers, 16 points for the Gen X, so we're seeing a doubling down with each set of parents. So that means that we could expect somewhere around a 60% lower with the next generation. That means the kids who are in our school right now graduating and will be having children, we'll see another doubling down effect if that trend holds.
Yeah.
Yeah. So at some point, if the glide path continues, there will be no religion.
And this is where, and I know that Friedrich Nietzsche gets a lot of flack for his statement, God is dead.
Yeah.
But when you look at that in its complete literature context, he's speaking as the madman, who's basically saying, if God is dead, then we're left with no moral foundation. Who will determine that foundation? Well, then it's left to us to determine that, and that's how we've killed God. And the madman goes on to paint a picture of moral decline into anarchy and chaos. And we see that in here. If you would think when you were a young, probably corporal or sergeant in the military, one of the biggest growing group dynamics among the African American community at that time was Islam. But now they're abandoning that for BLM. Because Islam didn't bring any social equity. And what we're seeing is I think a mindset of the religious systems are not pulling people out. They're not seeing justice and equity come from it. So therefore, they're abandoning it for the lies that the government's telling them and these organizations are telling them. And they're going to find themselves just as discouraged and disillusioned by those at some point.
So whenever we have these conversations, I always wonder a couple of same things. And first of all is, you know, you always wonder, well, what's next? You know, we talk about the slippery slope. And we have people who, oh, you know, there's no such thing as a slippery slope. But we all analyze what we've seen in our own lifetimes moving back even 20 years. And it sure does seem like there's progressions from, you know, at least the appearance of morality to, you know, where we are today. Mm-hmm. And so your question, your mind always runs to, okay, well, what's the future going to be like? The second question is... Well, what is this supposed to be like? Is there something I can do to change all of this, or is this God's plan? And you know, what was really interesting to me, the way this connects to your Revelation series, is, I mean, you began to talk about some things in the Revelation series that would make these kind of discussions actually about right now, because if I'm not mistaken, you explained to us that at least. I haven't fully always got my mind around it, but at some level, what's being talked about in the book of Revelation is actually ongoing right now. Mm-hmm. When you were talking about some of these things, and the reality is, and I was so perturbed by the last statement in this thing that I looked up on my phone, verses, I just typed in Google, verses about power in Jesus. And one of these verses that came up was 2 Timothy 3:5. And it was talking about the end times, you know, which we, you know, and if you, like my parents' generation, they're always running to the end times, and it's, you know, wars and rumors of wars, that Jesus is going to come back, then there's the Great Tribulation, and on and on and on. That's the mm-hmm. timeline. But what's interesting now is, you know, being open-minded to some of the stuff that you talked about in Revelation, I'm thinking about, okay, what about in my daily life is going on? And this is what it says in 2 Timothy 3:5, says, and this is quoted all the time when it comes to the last days. But understand that in the last days, difficult times will come. For people will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boastful, arrogant, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, ungrateful, unholy, unloving, irreconcilable, slanderers, without self-control, savage. And we go, yes, 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 we see this. Opposed to what is good, yes, treacherous, reckless, yes, conceited, loving pleasures rather than God, amen, amen, amen. They will maintain outward appearance of religion. What? Wait, whoa. That doesn't really fit into all the description that we see of the morality, you know, because we're, yeah, yeah, we see this. Wait a minute, they pretend to be religious too? And so what's my response supposed to be? He says, but we'll have this, they will maintain the outward appearance of religion, but will have repudiated its power. So avoid people like these. Avoid. So I'm not sure, Dr. Wilson, if I agree that we want in our society people who look religious but really are immoral on the inside. I don't know. It just depends, I guess. I would agree with you, yes, if we want to have a nice, comfortable life that I don't have to worry about whether my neighbor's going to steal my stuff. But if I want my life to be about eternity and really concerned with seeing the spiritual element, you know, who am I supposed to witness to? Because, you know, obviously this person, they seem religious, but they're not. And I don't know where that line is, because I don't want to live in a country that's just chaotic.
Well, it's kind of the concept of it's really hard to convince somebody who thinks they're going to heaven that they're actually on their way to hell.
Yeah.
I think to your point.
Yeah, and so I just wonder to myself sometimes how much are we supposed to be affecting the bringing about of a Christian society or moral society? How much am I just supposed to see this as part of the thing that, you know, I live in maybe the end times when this is what God has predicted is going to be like? And of course, I don't know where that line is, so I can't give you clear answers. But
we don't actually have to concern ourselves with that, right? In a sense of, our job is to preach the gospel, and in the preaching of the gospel, souls are converted whom God has ordained before the foundation of the world. I mean, in essence, that is our theology brought together.
Right. I just was focusing, I guess, on that one that said, avoid those people.
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, I have to...
Yeah, I don't need to be golfing with them. They don't need to be in my hunting club. If I have a relationship with those type of people, it is a gospel-centered relationship in order to bring them the good news.
And I think that, honestly, because it was kind of telling, because in here it said when someone moved, when they lost religion and they were African-American, they moved towards the Republican side, because most of the connection between African-American churches is Democratic. And when they, you know, if they were white and they lost religion, they moved to the Democratic side. What's interesting about that is that I think one of the things that we have to say, people having the appearance of religion, we would say a lot of the social justice movement, that's our issue, is that you have this appearance of religion, but you're denying the power thereof. Why? Because you're not talking every day in your churches about Jesus Christ and his power. You're talking about things like oppression and social justice and things that need to be changed in this world. I think sometimes the historical detriment of the eternal, and that's why it's not that we aren't concerned with when people are oppressed. What we're talking about is what is the main central theme of God's word, and we of course say that's the gospel.
I also think it's interesting. You know, we've kind of already addressed this, but he drew out the fact right under the details section that 2017 Gallup poll says that these are the things people take issue with, or they find acceptable, meaning it's they are going along with these things, and anything that would deny these, which is why they're leaving religion. Birth control, which is only necessary if you're talking about there's physical intimacy. Divorce, which how often is a divorce part of inappropriate sexual intimacy? Or unmet expectations, extramarital sex, intimacy, gay and lesbian relationships, intimacy. Every single one of those is exactly what you read, Jonathan. They're lovers of their own selves. I want what I want more than what I should or should not have, and I don't want anyone telling me what I want is wrong. And I always find it interesting to see, you know, the glide path of, you know, going back to the 60s of the sexual revolution. You know, and how did what led into that, by, you know, where we referenced the 1937 number?
Yeah, 70%.
Yeah, that 70% of our society is religious in 1937, that now we have just tanked. That suddenly it's dropping and dropping and dropping and dropping. And, you know, I can't help, we have to at least acknowledge the fact that that's societal movement of now this is sexual intimacy without consequence. This is part of what is affecting it. Like, we can say it's, oh, well, you know, they had these rules or they were legalistic and they told me. Okay, we have to understand people love themselves way too much. And the only way you will ever get to the point where you can trust Christ for salvation is that you realize yourself is actually a dirty, rotten sinner. And that you have to get to the end of yourself and find someone who loves you, even though you're just a pile of filthy rags. But as long as we think that we're the best thing that there is since sliced bread, and as long as we think that whatever I want is the most important thing in the world, then we have to at least acknowledge the fact that we are feeding into that narrative. And parents and grandparents and educators and those who have influences of people, if we're not doing what we can to squelch those natural desires, and I'm not even talking intimate natural desires, I'm talking about the natural desire of me first, that we have to be pushing back against that.
Did you guys see the 1999 numbers? It was referencing, it's on the first page.
It's still close to 70% in 99, wasn't it?
Yeah, let's see.
By the numbers, it's about three paragraphs down, three sections down at the top.
70% as recently as 99, 50% in 2018.
Right, so that means that whatever your church attendance was in 1999, you should expect to be 23% less today. So if you were averaging 500 in 1999 as a congregation, and you would be, if you were part of that national glide path, you would be at 400, a 20% reduction. So if you've maintained status quo for the last 20 years, then you're actually ahead of the societal norm.
You're the high end of the average.
Yeah, and right. I think there are some positive things that come out of these discussions, and one of them was one that Brian said, and Pastor, one of the ones you're saying is that, you know, if we're about the same, then we're maybe...
We are actually making an impact. We are making
an impact.
Yeah, we are making a difference.
And I think that, Brian, you said that you were kind of summing up what you said is that people understand that religion relates to my behavior. And if I want to have a certain behavior, I have to get rid of this religion because this religion is telling me I can't do this and I can't do this. Mm-hmm. And if you really dig into it, most of it, I mean, is basically related to sex. Right. And yeah, big print there. That's good news, though, kind of, because that means that people understand really the power of the gospel, because they understand you can't stay the same and claim to be this Christian
right.
thing.
That's correct. That's right.
Which I've always thought is so interesting. You know, I don't know if you guys have ever thought about this, but we look at, you know, and the sexual intimacy and the desires. Have you ever considered the fact that Adam and Eve, husband and wife, are the only people on the planet? And when sin enters the world through Adam's rebellion, now they went from being unashamed of their naked state to being ashamed mm-hmm. of their naked state. Yet every married couple today would be like, oh, yeah, no, once you're married, I mean, sure, when you first get married, it might be a little weird, but once you're married for a little bit, like, you don't think twice about it. Mm-hmm. How is it that they...
You don't? You and Lauren don't?
We're on a microphone, man.
Wow.
Yeah. All right. How is it that...
Does she listen to the podcast?
No, she does not listen to the podcast. But people that she knows and talks to listen to the podcast. So I am moving on with my thoughts. But Adam and Eve, who were created perfect, and there's no one around. I mean,
right?
They're yeah. hiding from God and God
right.
alone.
It doesn't have anything to do
but
with...
But now,
like,
we raise our children and you know, and we teach our teenagers and young people that now that you are married, even though you know, you're still naturally a sinner. You've been born again by the blood of Christ. And now that you are in a marital union, it's now okay. And we have to basically restructure the brain to think, hey, it is okay for you to be naked and unashamed with this person. Even though, you know, the very first people who dealt with this were like, oh, wait, I need to cover up. Like, what, I don't want the animals to see me?
Right, right.
Whereas most of us today are like, wait, there's no one around? Like, why is this a big deal?
So I have two thoughts, and this is a follow-up to what John was saying, and then I want to say something encouraging. I think 2 Peter 3, talking about the scoffers, knowing first of all that scoffers will come in the last days with their scoffing, and then the sentence is, following their own sinful desires. And we need to understand that sinful desires is what's driving this train right here. I don't want God ruling over me. I don't want you telling me what's moral and immoral. I don't want you superimposing a standard on me. I put up with it for so many years in the church because everyone was doing it. But now that I can be socially acceptable and not be connected to the church, then I'm abandoning the church.
Or they'd still be okay with Savior, but not Lord.
Right, same concept. Mm-hmm. You know, and in the South, up until probably the last 20 years, if you were going to be successful as a mayor, if you were going to be successful as a small business owner, if you were going to be successful, you needed to be a Baptist. You needed to be a Methodist. You needed to be part plugged into one of the major churches, even if you were unconverted. Even if you were the guy, I know they didn't have phones 20 years ago, but even if you were the guy that took your nap every Sunday morning while the sermon was being delivered, you were still a member of First Pres, you were still a member of whatever. Now, that's easier to see. Much more visible. But I would want to add to this conversation, look, God's still in the business of saving. Tuesday night, I went out to Fort Bragg, and there was a chapel, Tuesday night, there was a chapel full of millennials. Mm-hmm. Millennials. And you know what they had in their Bibles? In their hands? Bibles. Not cell phones. Physical paper Bibles. You know what they were doing? Taking notes. They were reading. These were millennials. Yeah. Right. What do we see every Sunday coming into our church?
Yep.
Young people. Mm-hmm. I mean 20-something. I mean young people. Okay? So I think that articles like this are helpful unless the preacher gets discouraged and he decides that, well, you know, the reason my church is not growing is because all, and just throws the car. No. There are still young people out there that want to hear the Bible preached.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things, we've done some things that weren't helpful in the past 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is when you hear the word religion, you know, so when you hear religion, people go, well, I don't have a religion. I have a relationship with Jesus. But Pastor, a statement you just made about 3 or 4 sentences ago, when people say, I don't want God ruling over me. We need to stop this relationship stuff and say, look, God desires to rule over you. If you're not in on his plan, you're going to be damned. And we need to get back to that.
Right.
But what we've tried to do over the past 50 years or so is make it more palatable. We start out with, oh, no, it's not religion yet you're upset with. It's a relationship. And then we bring them into the foyer. And then we bring them into the kitchen, the living room. And then into the kitchen and into the family. No, that's not the way it is.
Right.
You accept God's rule or you don't.
Yeah, and what we've attempted to do is to make the gospel more palatable.
We're trying to help God out.
Mm-hmm.
God,
yeah,
we're being so much like God. Right. Would you stop?
Right, I'm looking up right now because I can't remember his name. Jack will remember. But the 4 spiritual laws. And that whole campus crusade, Bill Bright introduces this whole 4 spiritual laws. Why? Because the message, repent, that doesn't go over so well. So what I need to do is figure out how to make the message of the gospel more palatable. You know? But Jesus said, take up your cross and follow me. Jesus said, sell what you have and follow me. Jesus said, if you're not willing to leave your mother, father, brother, sister, cousin, and dog, you're not worthy of being my disciple. You know, and we determined that message is no longer acceptable. But what I want to tell you is we had a 20-something in our church Sunday morning who left the church he's been part of for the last 4 years in a serious lay ministry position because they stopped preaching the gospel. Mm-hmm. And he knew they were supposed to be preaching the gospel. And the 70 teenagers that meet on Friday night at this church needed to hear the gospel. And he was reprimanded for preaching the gospel at this church.
Wow.
Mm. At this church. And he was reprimanded. He was told,
teach with me.
Use the curriculum. Use the curriculum that we give you. This is what they need. And he said, no, they need the gospel.
Yeah.
And we need to remind ourselves that Jesus told us in Matthew 16 that the gates of hell would not prevail against his church. I don't care what Gallup says. I don't care what Yahoo says. I don't care what the polling says. The gates of hell are not going to prevail against the Church of Jesus Christ.
Well, and we have to remember 2 things. One is, and we've talked about it here recently, is the progressive church Christianity movement. That is a reaction to what we were doing does not work, but I need a paycheck. We can't cease to exist. We can't give up all these, you know, assets. So what do we need to do? We need to do something to keep the social aspect of it going without being offensive. And the other thing that we absolutely have to remember is, regardless of where one of our listeners might stand when it comes to how the end times plays out, it has to get worse. At some point, it has to get worse. And so while it's disheartening to strive, you know, to strive on how we deal with that and process through it, we know it has to get worse in order for it to get better.
So Daniel chapter 7 has these four beasts. And the fourth beast is so terrifying that Daniel's, at the very end of the chapter, says, "My color changed."
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And my mind kept pondering these things, and I didn't talk to anybody. I just kept it in my heart. And this is after being made to understand that this is the future, this is the progression of what's going to happen in the world, that this beast trampled underfoot and destroyed and crushed anything and everything that was left that the other beast had not consumed and was taking down. But in verse 27 of this, it says, "And the kingdom and the dominion and the greatness of the kingdoms under the whole heaven shall be given to the people of the saints of the Most High. His kingdom shall be an everlasting kingdom, and all dominions shall serve him and obey him." And you couple that with going over to a quote from Real Christianity with William Wilberforce. 200 years ago, he said, "I am disturbed when I see the majority of so-called Christians having such little understanding of the real nature of the faith they profess. Faith is a subject of such importance that we should not ignore it because of the distractions or the hectic pace of our lives." And that, so it goes to what you were saying as a word of encouragement. There's nothing new under the sun. Mm-hmm. This is an ongoing battle. Mm-hmm. And it may be God's plan. We know it is, because perilous times shall come. Mm-hmm. We know that we have to get to that point. But it does, but it means that as we strive through these struggles, we will better identify those who are truly Christ.
Yeah, the wheat from the chaff. That's what Nate said in the very beginning of the conversation, that the 70% number was filled with unbelievers. So it's not that all of a sudden we have now have a nation of unconverted people. We had a nation that conformed to certain societal moral norms, as opposed to the lordship of Jesus Christ. And one of those primary was that heterosexual behavior was the primary sexual behavior that was acceptable. Homosexual needed to be kept in the closet. You didn't come out of the closet. And what we've seen is that that moral decline is so sufficient that you can now come out of the closet. And then we move from coming out of the closet to being accepted. And now we've moved from being accepted to you must celebrate. You not only are you going to tolerate, I want you to embrace this. You are to be more excited for me than you are for a heterosexual thing.
And it may go back even further than that, and what Brian mentioned in the free love movement of the late 60s, 70s, in the fact that there before that there was a stigma of even being divorced or anything because of having sex outside of marriage, even. So, I mean, it may go even back to that original throwing off of regular societal moral constraints.
Thank goodness Christ's kingdom is bigger and larger and more advanced than just American or America.
Yeah, and thanks goodness to the fact that it's not incumbent upon me to sell used cars.
Yeah.
Right, that it's the work of the Lord. Yeah. That the farmer sows the seed and then he goes to bed at night and he sleeps well because he knows he's done the best he can. Yeah. If not, when would you ever sleep? You would live with a level of anxiety that is incomprehensible.
Well, church history shows that, like, America's going downhill. There's another place like China that is bubbling over at this moment, because that's
normative, right? Yeah. That's normative.
But don't leave the seed in the barn.
Yeah.
We gotta spread it.
Spread it, right? Yeah. We gotta preach it. We gotta communicate it.
Yeah.
Right.
Do what you can.
And that is a part of the challenge that we face, as me and Brian discovered today. The ability of even our students to go out and articulate in a very coherent, cohesive manner and be able to witness to other people is drastically lacking.
Yes. We'll talk about that Sunday morning. Yep, I agree with you 100%. Yep, which is one of the reasons why we have these parachurch ministries like the Navigators, Campus Crusade for Christ, and all these ministries.
Fill that void.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. All right, listener, we appreciate you listening to this four-minute read that took Brian 6 minutes, just for a second to point here. And
good
we,
thing I wasn't reading.
Yes, you would still be reading at this point. Right. We appreciate you listening. Have a great day. Thanks.